sponsored by Black Magic Design, the world's highest quality products for the feature film, post and broadcast industries. Blackmagicdesign.com. And by JMR Rentals, professional, digital, cinema and broadcast equipment rentals in Brooklyn, New York. JMRNY.com.
Hello and welcome to No Rest for the Weekend. I'm Jason Godby, and today on the program, we're going to be talking about the new feature documentary, The Death Tour. I caught up with the directors, Stefan Peterson and Sonia Ballantyne, just before the film's world premiere at this year's Slamdance Film Festival. Welcome, guys.
Hey, Jason, thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for doing this. I'm always grateful to be part of anyone's junket. And I know you guys probably did a bunch of these today already. So I'm grateful to be with y'all. And I did get a chance to see the film. And I watched it last night and I thought it was really great. You guys did a fantastic job. I'm curious about a lot of things because this was not a world I was familiar with. And I'm sure you're probably getting that a lot. I felt like it's almost like its own subculture. Well, first of all, let's tell people about the movie. The movie's called The Death Tour. What is that? What is The Death Tour, and how did you guys come to make a movie about it?
Tour itself is one of many names for this legendary wrestling journey that goes, it lasts 2 weeks, and it goes to and through some of Central Canada's, Manitoba's more isolated First Nations towns. And it's been going on for 50 years. It's ran by the legendary promoter Tony Condello. He's helped to kind of shape the careers of many wrestling greats. And he's been doing it for 50 years. This was his 50-year anniversary. And so it still goes on. And it's for a lot of kind of wrestlers who are in the early stages of their careers who want to get some experience on the road. They do this trip. This kind of really helps them see if they've kind of got what it takes to kind of really make it in the business. And for others who are in the later years of their career, it's a chance to kind of get in front of these, you know, fervent crowds of 200, you know, kids who just kind of chant their names and to connect with a part of Canada that kind of too few of us get to really experience or even know of.
Why is it called The Death Tour? Is that because it's difficult, or do people actually die on this tour? Like, how did it get this name?
I think it got its the name actually came from Don Callis, who currently wrestles in WWE or AEW rather, and he named it the Death Tour because of its difficulty, because people are constantly terrified of falling through the ice on their cars when they travel through those roads in those communities, and like just because of the grueling schedule you're on, because you're basically traveling 16 hours a day, you get to the place you're wrestling, you put up the ring, you do the event, you sleep in the ring, you take it down, and you do it all over again the next day. And so it's like, it's called that just because it's so incredibly difficult to complete the tour.
I was sort of marveling at it just because, like I said, I didn't know this existed. And, you know, these places in Canada, it's not like they're really on anybody's radar. The territory that it goes through, you're going through a lot of this, like where Indigenous people live, these different nations and so forth. Was that part of the original idea for the tour? Or was it like, hey, we need a place to tour. These guys don't get a lot of wrestling and it's a fan base. So why don't we do that?
So I think Steph could talk about it briefly too, is like there's a Indigenous politician here in Canada called named Phil Fontaine, and Phil had spoken to Tony Condello, the promoter, back in the 70s, saying that the communities were hungry for entertainment and that Tony should take an event up there, like just to like see what would happen. And generally just like, but he basically gave him a rule saying that if you go up there, you also have to do these talks for the school communities about like don't do drugs, like that sort of thing. And so it started mostly with an idea from this politician that Tony got, and he's been doing it for the last 50 years.
How did you guys know about, what was about, you know, oh, it's called the Death Tour. It goes through these remote parts of Canada where you can't see anything except snow for miles. Let's do that. Let's get some cameras and go out and make that movie. Whose insane idea was this?
With steps.
And it wasn't hard to convince Sonya. I knew nothing about wrestling. And I had not, I didn't know much about those towns until I'd been working on another project up in that area. And then I just saw, and then wrestling, which I knew nothing about, showed up in these towns one night while I was there. And we just saw the connection between the wrestlers, who were these grown men and women in, like, you know, underwear doing backflips, you know, like really putting their life on the line, it seemed to me at least. To put on this show in the super, in these small, isolated, far out towns, and these kids were just into it in the communities. So I was at that show. I happened to be, you know, in a town the night the show came. So I was pretty, you know, my interest was piqued for sure. And then it was talking to the wrestlers the next morning who were packing up to leave that I found out that they were doing this for 2 weeks. Got home, did a little research, found out it was actually a very legendary tour ran by, you know, one of the goats of Canadian wrestling promoters, Tony. And so that was when, you know, it all clicked. You know, I'd seen how these two totally different worlds came together, and then this had a very important history to wrestlers in Canada, or Western Canada at least. And so that's when, you know, as soon as the project got a little bit of legs, a little bit of interest, you know, Sonya, who's an expert in the two worlds we venture into, came on board.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. I had been on it. I had known of the Death Tour previously because I'm a huge wrestling fan. I actually encountered it when I was a little girl, and they made a stop in my hometown, my home reserve, for gas. And it was something I was really nervous about initially because I didn't know what was still going on. And also I was really nervous that Steph didn't know what we were getting into, because I was like, you know, it's not hyperbole why they call it the Death Tour. Like, do you know why they called it the Death Tour? And so, yeah, I was very, I was won over by Steph's pitch to me about doing the show, doing the movie. So I was very fascinated by it.
It's a very sort of intimate movie, you know, and it looks great, by the way. I don't know what kind of crew you had, but it was really great. And considering where you're filming, these are not Hollywood locations, you know, but it's still a really great looking movie. But can you talk about the filming process?
For sure. Yeah. We had a team of six, you know, a team that, I've worked with a lot in the past on other projects. Our cinematographer is Van Royko. You know, very talented, very, very talented CSC cinematographer out of Canada. Our sound technician was Emery Murchison, who also was involved in post sound. And so, and then we had a field producer, Joe, Sonya, my co-director, as well as a driver. And so the convoy itself of the wrestlers was three vehicles. And then we had an SUV and then like a gear truck. And the gear truck was where all our, like, you know, sleeping and food and tents and everything went. And then we had brought a couple lights for the matches. And then gear wise, we had a number of Sony FX3s and then a gimbal, the Ronin 4D. It's a wonderful camera, but it's really Van's eye who helped kind of capture all that. And our very talented editor too, Jeremiah Hayes, who, you know, had the, you know, we're all on the same page in terms of sensibilities and, you know, who really just kind of weaved it all together in a way that, you know, was cinematic. And so, I don't know if that answers the question or if you want to go more in depth or not, but.
Well, I was kind of curious, like, cause you discover this thing, you hear about it, you say you want to cover it, but then you've got to get the cooperation of everybody on board. And I remember some of these people didn't really seem like they were all that keen on it. You know, like some of the people were like, you know, they you could tell that cameras were there, but they didn't seem to be behaving like cameras were there. I don't know if like they just kind of got to know you well enough that you were sort of invisible. But like there's scenes where, you know, somebody loses their keys, you know, and it's like this real like everyday kind of stuff. And I was just kind of wondering, like, what was that kind of process of, like, how do you get these? Because you're on board, right? You're like, let's do this. Let's do a death tour and freeze to death for 2 weeks. But then you're like, how do you get the wrestlers on board? Were they like eager for the publicity, or what was there resistance on their part?
We've been speaking to them. I mean, you know, we'd been speaking to Tony for 5 years, and you know, we kept trying to go on the tours. In 2020, myself and Joe, our field producer, you know, we did just the two of us went up on the tour for a couple days just to shoot like a sizzle reel. And that's, you know, we'd heard the stories and we'd seen some photos, but there was I think there'd been a doc or two done on it kind of before, but nothing recently. And so we went up to take a look, and that's when we saw in like the 3 days how rich of a universe it was, both from a wrestling standpoint and where they were going. So after 3 days, we came back with a ton of footage, just with like one camera and like one microphone, you know, come back with a ton of amazing moments and footage. And so that's when it was really like, okay, there's something is totally doable here. But then after that, so, you know, each year then COVID hit. So we had 2 years, the tour didn't happen, the communities were closed. Then as soon as they reopened, we'd kind of had all the pieces together to kind of get out there with the whole team. And at that point, Tony had kind of booked all the wrestlers who were going, you know, 4 or 5 months in advance. So Sonny and I were talking to them a lot, you know, like some more frequently than others, as much as we could. We went to visit each of them, or the ones we followed. We went to visit a handful of them ahead of time. That's where we got all their interviews with them, was it, you know, at home at their place, got to know what they do, film, you know, who they are, what they do, and why they're doing it. So that was kind of where we got to break the ice with them. From like a pre, you know, like a production standpoint. And then once we were out there, you know, it was pretty easy. You know, the amazing thing about wrestlers is they're all storytellers. You know, they're all here telling a four act structure, four act story. And they're all used to wrestling for cameras. So I've never had an easier time becoming invisible. Because they were very, they like, you know, when you're performing in a match, and Sonny can confirm this, there's like a cam side, you know, so they know, like they are, like cameras are very, you know, it's part of their language. So, and then it was a matter of just kind of getting to know them on a personal level, so that, you know, and judging, you know, when do we stand back and when not to. But yeah, you know, we filmed 2 terabytes a day. We filmed a lot. So, you know.
The other thing I was curious about, and what I really didn't know, because it's almost like you have two plots going on in this. You've got the plot of the wrestlers and the tour, but then you also have some of the stories of these communities that they're going through. And this is kind of what blown my mind was, I mean, it's called the Death Tour, but you guys actually had suicides happening during this tour. Like they were within days of people getting to a location. Was that part of the, were you guys was doing the bits about the community and talk and learning about that? Was that also a part of it, or was that something you kind of discovered when you were out on the road?
Well, I always knew about it just because like I'd grown up there and like I had friends who had killed themselves when we were young, and like growing up Indigenous in Canada is always something very, there's like it's very traumatic, even if you grow up in a good area, just because like there's so much racism that we face, there's so much systemic racism that we face. And when we decided to go up there, I knew I wanted to focus more like as much on the communities as we did on the wrestlers. And I remember Tony, well, he says, you hear Sage say it in the film, like it was the worst amount of deaths he had ever encountered as that he had gone up there in 50 years. And so it wasn't naturally something we had a really big discussion on whether or not we were going to talk about it, because we didn't want to be ghouls. We didn't want to like we didn't want to treat this like, oh, it's a new story, blah blah blah, like, because that's something that always annoyed me about Indigenous content and making it for myself, was like I don't want to capitalize on the pain of my own people. And so it was something that was really hard for a bunch of the wrestlers to go through, especially the newer ones who had never been to a community like that. But I was also really touched by how often we were embraced by the community when they knew in the midst of their mourning, they were taking care of us as well. And so it just felt like the right thing to do, because so many of the documentaries on the Death Tour in the past have focused just on the wrestling. But I think like the whole reason the tour continues to be so popular and why they continue to do it is because the communities embrace them. And like we there was no reason why we didn't have to wrestle. We could have had a show on. Like even though the whole community shut down, Tony himself could have been like, okay, we're still gonna have a show. But he didn't. He went by what the community said. And I think that showed a lot of That's when I became really impressed by him, because like he likes to portray himself as a bit of like a carny, like the old school type, but he naturally has a very marshmallowy center, and he became a grandpa to me basically on this trip. And so I think he holds a lot of esteem for the communities that came through very well in the documentary.
Probably one of the toughest things to do when you have a doc, when you have a subject that's quote unquote juicy, and it's like, well, how do we approach this? Am I showing grieving families? Are we stopping by funerals? And things like that, which, on the surface, it's like, oh, that's, some of that stuff could be good film, like good emotion. But I think you capture some of the emotion, the reaction from the wrestlers, which I thought was interesting. There's conversations that happen in cars and things where people are talking about it. Was there stuff that you captured that you left out of the edit, or was the choice not to even go after it?
A lot of conversation went on in post-production, but it was pretty clear to all of us when we were there. When this happened, we just kind of closed in on ourselves. We did not want to be going into the community and bothering them. They were closed down, they were mourning, we were outsiders. We kept it, we just focused on what was going on within ourselves. And then, yeah, that was towing that line of just making sure that that was probably the hardest part in the edit, was what was how much of it do we say, and how do we say it, and when, and just making sure that we remain respectful without deleting it, without pretending it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Was a lot of our conversations in post-production.
What was the most challenging part of it? I mean, other than the tundra that you guys are driving through. Like, I just so you know, I was cold just watching this thing. Like, I live in New York, it gets cold here, but we know nothing compared to like roads that are just ice. Forget about it. There's no way I'm driving across the Hudson, like that. No way in hell. So, but what was the most challenging part for you guys?
The hardest part, well, jokingly, well, not so jokingly, was I ran out of Coke Zero halfway through the trip, and I went through caffeine withdrawal. And so, like, one day I was just sleeping on a chair, and I was like, okay, Steph, if you need me, I'll just be right here. But I think also one of the hardest parts of it was also, there, like, you see Sarah doubting herself in the film, but there was also a lot of doubt with me and Steph, because Steph and I, this was our first film, as capital F filmmakers. And so I think we propped each other up a lot. And I think that was also the best part of the trip, like those dark nights of the soul where I was like, what the hell are we doing? Are we doing right by, or like specifically me, I was like, am I doing right by my people by doing this? Am I showing things that we need to show? And Steph was always there to be like, yeah, like this is like you're doing good work, and I hope I did that the same for him, because like it is very hard to act. Like I think that's also what I learned from the wrestlers, like fake it till you make it, and that's what I learned from Sean, the Massive Damage, just because it's like, as long as I believe I'm a filmmaker, I am, and so that really helped me deal with my doubt.
What was hard for me was trying to focus on just a few of the stories that were unfolding. I mean, there were some, like, every person was challenged in a different way, was moved in a different way, had highs and lows at different times. So the challenge for me was, just kind of deciding which stories we wanted to follow. And the cost that came, for us, I mean, we were filming for 18 hours a day, and then, like the crew, like we, it was a challenge, because after we're done, done filming, there's hours and hours of data wrangling and battery charging and cable coiling and sleep and food, and just trying to keep, just trying to stay mindful of the team's energy levels. But I pushed for sure, and yeah, and so the challenge was like when to put the tools down. So challenge was when to put tools down. Challenge was trying to figure out our schedule ourselves, and not like abuse of our team's motivation and energy and passion towards the project, while also like having to focus focus in on certain stories and like not give the love to some of the characters whose stories were just as worthy, just as beautiful, and just kind of committing to a few. Sure. That was one or two of them, but there was many. Yeah, there was many.
Have you guys had the chance to see this with an audience yet? Have you screened anywhere?
Just we showed a brief clip when we were at Canndocs in May. And just seeing how people reacted to it was really seeing how the wrestler like we haven't been able to see it with the wrestlers, but they saw like clips of it while we were in post, and hearing them react to it was just very like the first time I saw it with Steph, I was like, this is gonna be amazing, Steph. And it wasn't even the like it wasn't even the final version, but I'm like, wow. Just like and so I think there's something magical about it. So I can't wait for more people to see it.
We're catching you a bit before Slam Dance, so congratulations on that. What do you want for this movie? What do you want the impact to audience on audiences to be? And what sort of distribution are you seeking at this point?
Impact, like what I would love for for me, I kind of really discovered and fell in love with these two worlds. And although I've just scratched the surface, and I hope to do the same for these audiences who know nothing about where we're going in Canada, and who perhaps know nothing about wrestling but have come to see it the way I do, and the, as just a beautiful, brutal ballet that is improvised, and yeah, just that's what I hope to, and then I also hope that audiences are as inspired by the people we in the film as we were. I know Sonia and I have both been like deeply moved and inspired by everybody on that trip and in the film, so that's what we're hoping for. Sonia, is there anything
Well, I'm just hoping people like if you didn't like wrestling, you have a new appreciation for it. And I hope that it touches like professional wrestlers that to see the care that we attempted to portray wrestling with, because I know like people will poo-poo wrestling. I did myself while I was doing it, and it gave me a new appreciation for what wrestlers go through, and I think it made me even a bigger fan. So I'm also hoping that people realize that Indigenous people still exist and we still live. We sometimes are living in some of the worst conditions in the first world, basically. And I just hope it makes people more aware of like what is going on in their own backyards.
I was not a wrestling fan before I watched this, and but a great doc can make you care about something that is not on your radar. Like, I'm not a football fan. I couldn't tell you who won the last Super Bowl, but I never miss an episode of Hard Knocks because there's really great documentary filmmaking happening. And I felt the same way about this. I thought this is a subject that, it's a place I'm probably never gonna visit. And it's a something, and I'm probably not going to go to a wrestling show anytime soon, but it was really moving, and I really enjoyed it. And I thought, this has definitely got to have some impact. Do you guys at this point, are you looking for streaming distribution? I know that you've done some work on television. Do you see this as a streaming show or as a streaming movie?
Listen, we're open to everything at this point. All I know is that there's wrestling fans around the world, I know this will appeal broadly. All we know at this point is Slam Dance is coming up in the next coming weeks, and now we hope to reach as wide an audience as possible because I think there's something here for a lot of people.
All right, guys, I got to wrap up, but for those who want to know more about the film or know about you guys, where can they find you online?
You can find the film, his website is deathtourdoc.com, and that should have links to all of our social media accounts and handles, and that's where you get all the information beyond Slam Dance on where you'll be able to, eventually see this near you.
All right, so I did get an opportunity to see The Death Tour, and it's a very well-made documentary. Very much cinema verite style for the most part. There are a couple of sit-down interviews, but many of the interviews are captured on the fly. The camera is a bystander on the tour, and we're riding along with these wrestlers and seeing what they go through. It's not very glamorous, even though they are performers. We see these wrestlers as real people. We see them in and out of the ring, in and out of character. We also see the communities that the tour goes through and we get a sense of what the people are like and what the environment's like. As the directors mentioned in the interview, the title The Death Tour is a nickname given to the tour because it's so grueling and difficult, but here it has a double meaning. There are several suicides that happen in the various communities that they travel through, one of which happens the day before they arrive, and this company of wrestlers is faced with these tragedies, and they have to decide how they're going to interact with the communities. For Sonya Ballantyne, it's a very personal documentary. She grew up in this world, largely made up of Indigenous people in northern Manitoba. These filmmakers had to decide to what degree they were going to show these tragedies. Are they going to go to funerals, etc.? And I'm sure there were some tough conversations, but I think they made all the right decisions. They call attention to what's happening without sensationalizing it, and that's commendable. It's a very honest film, and it pulls no punches. It's beautifully shot with some stunning cinematography from Van Royko. And despite the subject matter being quite dark at times, it's a very hopeful and inspirational film. The stories of these wrestlers are inspiring, and we do feel a great deal for them. You don't have to be interested in wrestling to appreciate this film. You don't have to be a football fan to like Hard Knocks. You don't have to be a Chicago Bulls fan to appreciate a series like The Last Dance. You just have to appreciate some great storytelling. Now, I would say the biggest question for a film like this is, will it get seen? Yeah, hopefully it'll get distribution. I would say I highly recommend it if you can catch it at a film festival. Hopefully it'll be on a streaming service or in a theater near you in the near future. And that's all the time we have for today. Thanks so much for taking this trip down the rabbit hole. For more of our content, including our movie reviews, visit our website, norestfortheweekendpodcast.com. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app or on YouTube, youtube.com/getbehindtherabbit. Once again, I'd like to thank my guests, Stefan Peterson and Sonya Ballantyne, and our sponsors, Black Magic Design and JMR Rentals. For Behind the Rabbit Productions, I'm Jason Godby. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.